The Around the NFL Podcast is a workout wonder.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey there, Daddy Rich.
Whoa, hello. I'm pushing a new nickname in the mix right now. Daddy Rich, after the great
Chuck Daly, who our international listeners might not know. Coach of the Bad Boys era Detroit Pistons and coach of the 1992 Dream Team U.S. Olympic basketball
team. I like Chuck Daly. I like the way he dressed. I like his hair.
That's why they called him Daddy Rich.
Well, no one, most people don't know he was called Daddy Rich either. At least I didn't.
Because he was such a great dresser. I mean, he was dressed impeccably.
Which was not me, but
he's got hair like the old Zeuser.
Yeah. And also our intro, which was the workout warriors thing, we've gotten time and time again people work out to this podcast. Whether it's pumping iron like Patra or doing your cardio, trying to burn some cals.
It's largely the female audience.
Have you ever tried
a lot of males too.
I'm surprised at that. Have you ever tried to work out or exercise with a podcast on? It's annoying, I would say.
I do not like to lift weights with somebody talking in my ear. I prefer like
Greg, you told us that you've never been to the gym.
Well, I run a lot, and I used to run, and I tried out like Bill Simmons' nasal thing going on that wasn't really getting
Shots
me going
fired.
At mile 4 or 5. I like the Simmons podcast. I'm just saying, it doesn't feel like the right thing for all your exercise.
Greg, try not to bring up other podcasts on the show.
Yeah, no one's listening to that one.
Exactly. So anyway, we're back with another show, the final show of the week, and it's a continuation, part two of our big rundown post-draft. We wanted to hit every team in the NFL. On Tuesday's show, we hit all 16 AFC teams, and now we're going to hit the 16 NFC teams in a little segment we like to call Around the NFC in 48 Days.
Or minutes.
Just so
How do you mess that up?
I don't know. It's so well structured.
It is. It's pretty tight. The structure's tight.
The delivery Very of nice. The name of the segment was pretty tight,
Well,
too.
Let's get
like
it right.
That.
Around the NFC in 48 minutes. So we're going to get into that. We're going to do some news because there is some juicy news that's landed in the last 48 hours. So we got a couple things to get to. Before any of that, just want to thank, we love when we get mail from our listeners, and this one came from Japan. Greg, you know Japan very well. What is the name of that city?
I've been there many times.
Kanaya, Japan.
Although, for all we know, is that really the city? I don't know if that's just part of the stamp or something.
I don't know.
It might say, like, that might mean hello.
Gareth Williams, Real Folk Dude, at Real Folk Dude on Twitter, sent us a letter from Japan. He's not Japanese, but he's in Japan.
Like Zach, who
sounds
right
Irish.
He calls himself the All Japan NFL Trivia Champion, and certainly he would beat Zach Goldman if he ran into him at a local bar. But he's a big fan of the podcast, and he also sent us, in addition to a very nice letter, he sent us all, what are throwing stars? Origami stars?
Oh, that's right.
They do look like origami. Yeah, like little paper stars.
With our favorite players. So I got a Cumbie head on a green and white. Wes, you got?
I got Lee Johnson, who was the old Bengals punter, who it was a very thoughtful,
gift.
Lee Johnson was when I broke up with the Bengals.
He was the punter that got
called out ownership. Yeah.
Mark, you had.
I got Colt McCoy.
Naturally,
and I had Matt Castle.
So we have these little origami stars that are sitting at our desks. So thank you very much, Gareth. That was very kind of you. So we just wanted to say thank you, and always send us gifts.
Yeah.
As long as there's nothing deadly inside them.
Gareth, stop by the NFL Japan office. They have an office there. I walked by once. Just in Omotesando. Yeah, it's reopened, I guess. I just walked by one day and I saw the NFL.
What's happening there?
Did you attempt to get a transfer?
Well, it was Sunday. I thought that would be cool. There's just four people working there. It's a website, basically. Something like
Sounds
that.
Like a cover operation for something else. But
all right, let's check behind the glass now. He is the man, the myth, youngish Kobe. Hey, Dave, behind the glass.
What's going on, guys? And just to go back to the open of the show, Workout Wonder. And again, you know how Greg always reviews the show open with facial expressions. Uh-huh. He didn't like this one. And that was really weird because he wrote this one. So I don't know.
I approve this, but it was probably – I gave you a list of 25, and it was 24th on that list. I don't know what happened to these ones, but we'll get to
it. We are crowdsourcing from our listeners. And, okay. I mean, if you want to hire comedic writers, you know, let's do that.
TD learning something that we all know. Greg, not always easy to please. The boss sometimes has a
high standards. Sometimes I don't like my own work. It happens all the time.
That's a good way to be. Real quick, the workout team's definitive list. One is movie scores. Can't go wrong with that.
Oh, please.
What?
Then
that's absurd.
Movie scores are the best.
Gonna fly now.
Because they have the highs and the lows, the peaks and valleys. That's what you need for a workout.
So, like, the Godfather theme as an example?
You have to pick out a specific one, you know? But it's like a part in the movie that you really like.
Like Wind Beneath My Wings?
Whatever.
From Beaches?
You know, then music, then some podcasts, and then I also got an origami from Gareth, Russell Wilson.
Oh, that's right.
Man. Nice.
So shout out to Gareth.
All right, very cool. All right, let's do some news. Did we just hear a brutal homicide being committed?
No. Those are two guys I would love to work out with, play with. Ed Reed and Ray Lewis online. Two Ravens legends. Obviously, Ed Reed.
Well, we might have that.
Officially calling it a career.
A little bit of a spoiler alert in our news. Thanks.
Oh, geez. Sorry.
All right. We'll get to that.
I knew that already.
Okay. Let's start with the news that broke yesterday morning in our office. Wednesday morning, the Ted Wills, NFL gumshoe, noted NFL gumshoe Ted Wills, released his report to Commissioner Roger Goodell on the New England Patriots in relation to the footballs that were used in the AFC title game. It was, 274 pages, something around that madness. And ultimately what came out of it was that Wells found that he believes that the balls were in some way manipulated. There was missing air, and he pointed the finger at the Patriots. And also, Mr. Perfect, Tom Brady, Greg Rosenthal, who, while he didn't outright say that Brady was involved, said there was reason to believe that he at least knew of it on some level.
More likely than not.
Likely than not that Tom Brady was aware of the practices that were going on. So this, of course, has created another avalanche upon the defending champions about, whether they're cheaters. Straight up, that the Patriots are cheaters. So now you have the Spygate scandal, and now you have this, the Deflategate. And Wells, after I think a lot of people, myself anyway, I thought the Patriots were going to get cleared. That's not what happened. It ended up, to me, another black mark. Your take, Greg.
Well, we don't know how big of a deal it is till we know if Tom Brady's suspended or not. So we're waiting for that news. I mean, if they just fine him, what's the big deal?
Listen. Uh-oh. Oh, no. Storm has rolled in. The throne of ease. Everyone, run for cover. The cherub boys. They can't take the water.
The medieval countryside. Stormy.
A lot of people were, sending me messages on Twitter. Oh, how's the old throne of ease doing now? I mean, the fourth Super Bowl isn't going away. It's fine. And like a lot of this story, I'm trying to muster interest in it. And I almost can't say that because I'm a Patriots fan. It sounds like I'm being a homer. But I didn't care about Spygate either. I don't really care about all the legal stories that have been popping up over the last year. I don't. It's not why I like sports. And that's pretty much my reaction to this. I'm just waiting for it to end.
People lose their mind when the Patriots are the subject. It's completely irrational. There's a hatred there, which, comes from fans because, of course, you hate other teams. And there's a miasma of paranoia. Mm. Like, what are the Patriots doing that we don't know about? After 4 months and millions of dollars, the only thing that gumshoe Ted Wells could tell us with certainty was that these two chuckleheads, the equipment guy for the officials and the equipment guy for the Patriots, Beavis and Butthead, know that Tom Brady likes his football.
90s reference. Good job.
Like every other quarterback in the league, likes his football a certain way. That's the only thing he could tell us with certainty.
Miasma of Paranoia was by a great metal band in the 80s. I love them.
By the way, Greg, your comment? Well, I do think you're a little disconnected from the Patriots at this point because you got so spoiled, so it's been easy for you to pull away as a fan. Mm-hmm. Whereas when, Mark, you occasionally say about the Browns, I don't believe it, but Greg, I do believe it. But the way you're reacting is the same way all Patriots fans are, which is I'm going to put my head in the sand. I'm going to deny, 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 and hope this goes away because I don't want people to remember this era of Patriots football as them being cheaters. We just want it to be the Brady Belichick golden run with the four rings and the six Super Bowls. But that you can't do that because there's too much now. It's two big major investigations.
No, the average Patriots fan is going the other way. They're arguing all the points. I have no arguments for this. I have no, you know, I don't think they've done a bad job or whatever. It's great. Like, it definitely looks bad for Tom Brady, obviously. I'm just keeping in perspective that there's a $25,000 fine in the NFL for altering footballs. That tells you what the NFL thinks about altering footballs. All the rules about footballs are made so that the quarterbacks can have the feel exactly how they want. So to me, it's a big story about something that's boring.
Well,
it's
to your point, to your point, people around our office care less about this issue today than they did yesterday, and they're going to care less tomorrow. And in general, everything in our society that people want to say, everyone's up in a rage about, a week from now, no one will care at all. The Patriots will be fine.
But they care more about it than the Aaron Hernandez verdict.
Overall, I don't think that's true.
I would say in terms of sports conversation and people going back and forth, maybe not, but it's like, it's hard to get too worked up about it.
It's funny that you mentioned $25,000 fine for doctoring footballs because quarterbacks are encouraged to doctor their footballs.
Right.
This is from 2013 New York Times article on Eli Manning. The ball has been scoured, scrubbed, soaked in season, a breaking in process that takes months and ensures that every ball used by the Giants in the game will meet Manning's exact preferences. Why are you allowed to do this? Why is that quarterback ball not treated like a kicker ball? It's because Tom Brady and Peyton Manning went to the league in 2006 with a petition, and the league said, yes, we want, like you said, we want the balls to be to the quarterback specifications. So it doesn't confront me that Tom Brady wants his balls.
Yeah, but within the PSI the league
right,
sets. So
right.
If they're going below that in this case, then that's not right.
And if Ted Wells had come back and said, hey, Tom Brady took a needle to these balls, that would be something different.
Right, and I get all that, and if they've proven that the rules were broken, it shouldn't have happened. Obviously, it didn't have like a big impact in the game. He played great in the second half. That's it's like, okay, there's unnecessary roughness all the time in these games. There's ways different things happen. It's like, it was a penalty. That's what the level it should be at to me is like a guy who does something unnecessary, like an unnecessary roughness, that takes a cheap shot, that sort of thing.
Oh, you're soaked, Greg.
You're
going to get the flu.
You know, it's going to work out great because the Patriots will just take
another FU season by the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly.
Man. Oh, this is going to be the big FU season for the Pats. It's like, enough of the FU season.
Brady. Blame the media for overreacting, and you wouldn't have to have an FU season.
It's not just the media, though. It's proven after all the millions of dollars and the 270 pages that something was up that was against. Why do you think Tom Brady didn't turn his phone over?
Right, but I can't see how anybody don't – how is this not overblown?
Wes, let me ask you a question. Would you rather that nothing had been done at all?
No,
it fell outside of the league's standards. So either maybe the league just doesn't create standards, or if they do – and there's a suspicion that they went outside the standards, we don't investigate it because it's going to get blown out of proportion.
No, what I would rather do is, like Greg said, there's a $25,000 fine for doctoring the ball. That's what it should go to.
But they didn't prove that, so that's why they went and did the study. Now you give the $25,000 fine, and we'd be done with it.
They doctored the ball, so the guy who doctored the ball should get the fine.
Fair enough.
And it wasn't Tom Brady.
But what are you saying? What is the overreaction by investigating it?
No,
been
I'm
done
the
wrong
overreaction
here?
Is being done by the media and the fans that – the cries of cheating, when we know the Ted Wells report did tell us nobody above Tom Brady was involved in this. Belichick wasn't involved with
agreed.
It. Robert
we
Kraft
all agree
wasn't
on
involved
that.
With it. So all of this, it's going to affect Tom Brady's legacy. It's going to affect Bill Belichick's legacy. That's what gets me very
I guess,
upset.
But I think most of us here don't think it has any effect on his legacy.
Well, I think our podcast is going out to thousands and thousands of people, not just the four people in this room.
I think anybody with a hot take that Tom Brady's going to be facing a big suspension or, you know, he should, you know, I'm sure there's some idiot columnist that's saying Tom Brady shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. All that kind of the BS, that's not going to happen. I don't think he'll be suspended.
At all. There are at most one game.
But
Wes,
know.
You said yesterday you thought he would get a suspension, and so did
because I think it's going to be hard to know how they're going to. I don't think he should, but
it's really hard.
But
to
one
guess,
game, but maybe that we at most.
Well, how is, in the Miami Herald, they said they were considering a year-long suspension.
Oh,
potentially.
Hell no. What a joke.
It would shock
well,
me.
That's
we're
ridiculous.
Dealing with a league that is very unpredictable right now on
right.
how they treat discipline. That's why
right.
I don't.
They
know
don't operate as a U.S. as the U.S. courts. They operate as the NFL.
If it was a domestic incident, a violence incident, I would think you would be worried, but this is a deflation of the balls. And I would be stunned, especially with week one kickoff, not to be cynical about it, that they would take Tom Brady out of the equation.
I agree with
and
you.
And I think that plays into it, even if it shouldn't.
The thing that gets me is it's all just so serious, and it's about, like you said, deflating footballs. It's a 240-page report and a lot of really emotional reaction between us even.
Well,
and it's all this stuff over something that's relatively kind of a silly small issue. It seems like it could be like the subject of a Christopher Guest NFL movie or something.
It's because it's the Patriots. If this was Aaron Rodgers overinflated his ball to 16 and a half pounds or whatever, no, there would be no investigation. Nobody would pay attention to it.
Here's why I'm a little worried for the suspension is that it's when they really crushed Sean Payton for Bountygate, it was for not being truthful and not giving all the information to the NFL. And so there's some precedent there that they're going to suspend and get you more on the cover-up than the crime. And if they decide that they don't think Tom Brady was being upfront with them, then that's where they could be in trouble.
TD, the final word.
Yeah, guys, I just want to ask.
Dan is loving this.
It's great.
It just seems like you guys are fairly on the same page, but what about to those asking the question on a human level? I mean, Brady went out there, had that press conference saying the Bulls, you never touch the Bulls, they're perfect just the way you like them. And I know, Chris, you're saying the equipment guys are the ones who mess with the Bulls. So clearly, apparently, they act under Tom Brady's orders. And you see,
I don't think that's clear at all. I think that's one thing that's in the Wells report that's not clear, that Brady didn't have any communication with Yastrzemski for 6 months until the day after the championship game, when Yastrzemski texted him and said, you got to get a hold of me.
But to be fair, too, like, there's no way they're messing with Tom Brady's balls without knowing exactly how Tom Brady
balls. Right, like every other equipment staff in the league. So they know that Tom Brady likes his deflated as much as possible. That doesn't mean he's telling them to do it.
Well, yeah, I get
that.
I'm
not even arguing that he did it. It's just that seems, you know, that's pretty likely to happen. I agree.
So what I would say to them is that you don't be so upset about a report that was not conclusive in any way whatsoever.
Yeah. And, again, just to be fair, it's the past because, again, it's the past. They have Spygate and all that stuff to do with it. And why it's making such big news isn't because of Tom Brady's legacy. It's like, hey, it's that
because
whole.
Because Spygate was also an incredibly overblown story. People get paranoid
about
the Patriots.
League figures. Real shady. Helicopter. Real
when you push the envelope and try to gain a competitive advantage like Paul Brown did, like Vince Lombardi did, like every other great coach in the league, when you're an innovator, people are out to catch you because you're on top.
Still very shady of Tom Brady.
Shame.
On a human level.
All right, moving on. Good convo, guys.
This has been such a great month.
This
as a
will
Jets
be
fan.
It keeps getting better. This is going to be our longest podcast ever. So if you're at the gym, I want you to hydrate. Okay, let's move on. The Dallas Cowboys. Okay, let's talk about Lael Collins, who, of course, the LSU offensive lineman, whose ex-girlfriend or someone he was connected with, who was murdered. He was brought into that investigation by Louisiana police who were trying to figure out, who committed that crime. It led to him falling completely off the draft board, or at least out of the first round, and then he requested not to be drafted. He became a free agent, and we wondered how long he would stay, unattached to a team. Not very long, because the Dallas Cowboys scooped up Collins, a very talented offensive tackle, signed him to the 3-year, fully guaranteed $1.7 million deal. That's an unprecedented number for a player who was not selected in the draft, but this was a truly unique case. So the Cowboys get the job done. I feel like being sometimes when you're the Cowboys, you have advantages of this being the Dallas Cowboys. I think Collins, fed into the star hype there. Now he's a member of the team, and he's joining an offensive line that's stacked, Chris Wessling.
I learned from that press conference, which was fairly insufferable,
yeah,
that the logo of the Cowboys means a lot to Lael Collins, that he wants to be a star. The Cowboys have a star on their helmet, and his family's a star too. So, I mean, that did mean a lot to him.
Well, it is a perfect example of the Cowboys brand or
it's
franchise.
It's a victory for the brand.
Literally getting them a player.
Absolutely.
No Super Bowls in 20 years, and that brand still carries something.
Well, I think one reason it does is because Jerry Jones, love him or hate him, and when we launched this podcast, it was during a time when Jerry Jones regularly got fried on this show. For good reason, because he had made a series of major tactical blunders. But over the past couple years, you look at what they did in this draft. Byron Jones, Randy Gregory, who people were scared of, and Lael Collins. That's three number one picks that they got, at one of them coming after the draft. And I give Jerry Jones a lot of credit for his ability to recruit a guy like Collins when he had already gone out to dinner with Rex Ryan. Dolphins players are trying to corral him down.
Former teammates.
Right. I mean, that speaks to what you guys just mentioned. But also Jones, I think, and the fact that he stepped away from being some sort of George Lucas-level power-hungry, you know.
Are you everyone, sure?
Well, no, I think he's changed. I
this
just think
smells, this
he has less power.
Is all
I think he is, there's more cooperation with the people around him, and they're making smarter choices.
Well, they're
and
all
I like
in
what
his
he
family.
Said. Well, or well, Jason Garrett.
His voice,
too.
I think, Mark. I think you're right. His voice has been lowered in those rooms.
Right, but Stephen Jones, who's
do we know that
son,
for sure?
Is like the guy supposedly running the show. So I mean, it's all
well. The results
be,
have been fine over the last
yeah,
couple years.
Seems
yeah.
to be a little bit more rational than his father.
Yeah,
that's fair.
There is, and somebody tweeted at Greg. They've created a combustible locker room, and I don't want to lump in Collins with that, because if he has nothing to do with what happened with this poor woman in Louisiana, then he's an innocent man, and you know, so I don't want to do that. But
which at this point, the Cowboys are making the statement.
Yeah, they
that he
must
is.
Be confident.
It's assuming, and he talked to the police. I'm sure they have more information than we.
But
do.
the Randy Gregory move is, you know, that we don't know if that's going to play out. These to me smell like classic Jerry Jones gambles, and he's hoping that he hits on blackjack three times in a row. But I don't know if it's going to work out.
But they are pushing hard. They are all in. Tony Romo's got a bad back, and he's 35 years old, and they are ready to go try to win that Super Bowl before Romo's window is up. It's not just Brady and Manning. I mean, Romo's 35 years old. Who knows how he's going to age? And they're going for it. And you know that's
with DeMarco with Run DMC as right. their running back.
Yeah, that's fair. But it reminds me just of old Cowboys moves, and it's an advantage to have your owner as the general manager in a circumstance like this. And I have to admit, I mean, I know you said it was an insufferable press conference, Wes, but I did try to put myself in Lael Collins' shoes and thought he was very impressive. The way that he spoke, I wouldn't say I had my hair standing on end or anything, but he's a young kid who just had a really crazy thing happened to him, and he was taking it the right way, and with that he was fired up to basically have a great career and put it past him.
It was the melodrama that the Cowboys organization loves. I half expected a string section to be behind the dais during the press conference. And Collins, who blew everybody away on Twitter, you know, maybe to a little too high a degree, where people were like, well, we know for sure now that Cowboys are in good hands with Lael Collins. It's like, whoa, he said he boasted about it. He came off well, but I guarantee you this is a quote from him. I'm going to give this organization everything that I have and more. This is going to be the best offensive line in NFL history, mark my words. So if nothing else, it was an unusual press conference and in unusual circumstances.
You did see the buildup of the last week, I think, in his statements. I guess that's what yeah. I'm saying. You saw a kid that had been through a lot for the last week,
yep.
and he was enjoying his moment on the
other
side.
Well, and has a lot of reason. For another player could have been very angry about what happened, and he turned around, and his response was completely different. So I don't know. I don't give him anything lower than a B-minus, A-minus. That he did fine.
Oh, I'm giving
that
him
part,
an A.
Wow, that part's completely understandable, and he handled it well. But then you get, like, Jason Garrett up there just overly effusive in his praise. And did you hear what that young kid said at the beginning? Like, our offensive line's going to be the – all right. You're starting to sound like an organization that's drunk on its own hype now. I mean,
oh, that's not new. So you're going to – yeah, I mean, that's what they are.
Right.
You get Ronald
on.
Leary out of the starting lineup, I
you
guess
know,
he'll play guard, and
one,
away we go.
One 12-4 season, and that organization is acting like it is 95 again.
Well, I think
they're
like, we've got two more years to act like this, and then it's over because we've got Brandon Whedon at quarterback.
Jarrah get crying at
Brandon
the dais.
Whedon would be older than Tom Brady by then.
Well, we'll see.
Jarrah crying at the dais. What did Jason Garrett said? He had goosebumps. He had not goosebumps. It was like
bump chills or something.
Bump chills.
Like,
what are you even talking about, bro?
I don't know.
Anyway,
that reminds me
it's
of
hard
an old
to be.
Phrase
you know,
this,
Dan, when you're up there,
repeat on this podcast.
When that red light goes on, Dan, sometimes it doesn't go well.
Yeah, that's true. So anyway, yeah, just to make it clear, I agree totally with you, Greg. That if this kid is innocent and had nothing to do with that, I'm very happy for him. I think we all are. But it's just funny. Putting him in Dallas adds a whole nother level of drama. It's like watching a soap opera almost.
And it's fascinating, too, the way they're going about this. They are buying their offensive line hype at this point. They are challenging the rest of the league that says, our offensive line's so good, we could put any guy at running back and it'll be fine.
Ed Reed did not play in the NFL last season. And He finally retired yesterday, and on Thursday came his press conference, his goodbye press conference. So he ends a 12-year NFL career, multiple All-Pros, a Super Bowl title. You know, he's definitely in the discussion as the best free safety to ever play the game. Wes, I'll start with you here. You wrote the piece up yesterday when we learned he was going away. Is Ed Reed the best free safety in the history of the NFL?
I believe he is. I didn't get to see a lot of these guys play in the 50s and 60s. It's a different game now. But when somebody like Bill Belichick, who we've said it before, is a bipedal football encyclopedia. He owns the biggest football library in the world. His father was known as the greatest scout in NFL history. When someone like that says he's the best free safety I've ever seen in 40 years of coaching, I mean, that carries a lot
right,
of
water. And he wasn't on his team, so there's no heartstring stuff. That was from a pure analytical view.
And one of the memorable things in a football life of Belichick, it wasn't even in front of a press conference trying to pump Reed up. It was just him and Tom Brady, Belichick going back and forth talking about how great he is.
And Belichick saying everything he does is exceptional, and then the two of them go into just a grand appreciation that no matter what receivers are running past Ed Reed, he knows exactly what the quarterback's doing. He has great instincts and one of the best students of the game. I mean, he was a big-time tape watcher and gleaned a lot from that.
Mark, your thoughts on during the press conference, which was perfectly Ed Reed's wearing a oversized jacket, open collar shirt, wearing a Under Armour hat, and then a long beard with white hair flowing out, saying just talking, going on and on, you know, kind of in a fun, lovable uncle way. They ask who is the best quarterback he ever faced. And his response, his favorite quarterback to go against, every quarterback in Cleveland I loved. Cincinnati, too. Pittsburgh was always a tough team to play. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, you can't go a day without something like this coming out there about the Browns organization, but he's speaking the truth because for all we want to say about Belichick and the best team in the AFC, who he gave them a headache, watching, they would always align the Browns with either the Steelers or the Ravens on Monday Night Football. You get that one primetime game a year. Cincinnati, the same thing. How many times did Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed blow those games up before halftime with an 88-yard return? And all the rest of the game is just heard, the commentators going on and on about Ed Reed the entire time. So I think the rest of the AFC North is saying, good riddance. But it's out of respect because it's him and Polamalu, and I feel like we're just redoing our mid-level NFL Now hit from this morning.
You guys did a great job. Everyone should watch it. NFL
solid
Now,
B.
The chemistry between Sessler and Wesseling bordered on erotic.
It was free coffee. But I'll tell you, it was like the few guys that changed that position. They said, who's the next bunch of them that's coming down? Well, there is no next bunch of them.
When Polamalu retired, I said he reminded me of a lion on the Serengeti with his mane flowing. I just picture Reed like this bow-legged freelancer back there picking off passes, and then he turns into one of the game's best runners as soon as he gets his hands on the ball. I mean, he was just – he has the record for most interception yards in NFL history, and if you watched him play on an everyday basis, that was not a surprise at all.
And if he came up for the Hall of Fame at the same time as Polamalu, which I don't think he will, I think Reed now gets in a year earlier, I would take Reed over Polamalu if you have to make the choice.
I would too.
Well, Damashek, Canton would have more street fights than at any other Hall of Fame celebration ever.
One funny anecdote from the goodbye press conference. He originally wanted to retire on April 20th, but then he let us all know that a friend had talked him out of it because of the quote, unquote, things behind 420. It's the most ridiculous thing.
That's hilarious.
Is 420 a thing overseas? I don't even know.
I don't know.
Anyway.
No, because it's a U.S. police code, so probably not.
Let's give this a shot.
Begs off. TD begs off. Anyway, that was weird. And one more thing on Reed. In 2013, I actually randomly, one of the strangest, more exciting moments of my career is I got to go to the Oscars, the red carpet pre-show. As a part of the Rich Eisen show, and I was there with Chris Brockman, who's on Eisen's show now, and also Ed Reed, who's the official, I guess the interviewer was his role, and I was just there to watch it all. And it was one of the funniest things to be hanging out with Ed Reed for like 6 hours in very confined space with like a Chinese media team to one side and a Mexican media team to the other, and then just me and Ed Reed, basically, and him talking to celebrities. And he said Halle Berry was the one that he wanted to meet. He talked about her all day. He's like, oh, I got to see some Halle Berry. But the celebrity he was most excited to meet was Don Johnson, because he loves golf and talked about Tin Cup multiple times.
I think the 420 reference is beginning to make more sense.
What else did you guys talk about?
You know, we
take it offline, TD.
Yeah, we didn't talk a ton, but because he had his handler with him and he was busy on the red carpet. But I remember he would turn around and he'd be like, you know, it's really hot in here. He's like, you hot? And I'd be like, yeah, I'm pretty hot, Ed.
That's it? Sheesh.
Yeah, the I wouldn't sports? Say like we hit it off.
Small talk? Talk movies?
Talked a little movies, yeah. It was great, and it was a great experience. And now it's over. Everything's in the past. And that's what's happening. A lot happening. Now,
do you ever look at Chris Law and think, that could have been me? I could have been with Brockman, moved over to the Rich Eisen show.
You know, I've never thought that before.
Probably that wouldn't really make sense since this was your only time with them. But
no, I'm very happy where I am here at the Around the NFL podcast. All right, here we go. It is time to go around the NFL. Excuse me, I'm going to mess this up every time. Around the NFC in 48 minutes. can I get a little Come On Ride the Train just to get my blood flowing here?
Maybe.
I mean, this is a super-sized show. This is going to be the longest Around the NFL podcast ever. Yep. Let us know if the long podcast bothers you at all. You know,
you could be honest.
Would you rather us break it up into two and have one go down on Friday?
Right, that sort of thing.
All right. Riding that train all around the NFC, Sessler. Texting.
Got to handle a few things. I didn't realize this was going to be the longest podcast in history.
None of us realized
it. Who are you texting, huh?
My child care provider.
All right, here we go. poor Mark. Staring at the clock. Here we go. Let's
start. I don't want to be.
Here we go. We're going to start with the NFC East, just as we started with the AFC East. And we'll start with Greg Rosenthal, who is going to tell us about the Washington Redskins.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, give it. We got to get the horn to get going.
All right, here we go.
3 minutes.
Well, let's just start with Scott McGlewin and the fact that he's going to get a long leash, I guess, from fans. How much do we trust in his picks? And could there be a chance that Brandon Scherff, the number five overall pick, turns into the next Levi Brown, the guy everyone remembers as kind of a boring right tackle taken instead of a great player, Leonard Williams right behind
him. How about Robert Gallery, another Iowa offensive lineman who was taken at the top of the draft?
Because if you and I like this from Scott McGlewin to some degree, if you trust in, you know, the draft Knicks, their draft was a little wacky. I don't think people loved the Scherff pick. Preston Smith in the second round, you know, kind of early in the second round, a little earlier than people thought. Matt Jones at running back when some other bigger names at running
back
were
there. Mike Jones.
So we'll see. Is Scott McGlewin going to be a genius or what?
Well, I mean, he's shown before that he has the talent to scout linemen.
Sure.
Right? He brought in Mike Iupati to San Francisco. So I think it's the kind of thing as we come out of this, like, heat-seeking nonsense after the draft where people are like, uh-oh, he passed on him. Leonard Williams, everyone's going to be watching that. Well, maybe they will. And you know what? Maybe he just found out a player he liked more. And a lot of times these guys that cause everyone to freak out on draft day are the ones that play 6 years longer than the person we're hyping up. So, you know, yet to be seen.
It reminds me of the film Draft Day, you know, which a lot of people are talking about lately.
Why?
I guess it's on cable, but Kevin Costner knew what he wanted, and he went and got him. Vontaze Mack, every time. Go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
Why are you sorry?
No, because I realize this is your 3 minutes.
It shouldn't be mine.
It's your pizza pie.
We should all be talking about the Redskins because I don't have that much more to say.
Shame.
I mean,
well, I think it's true that I've spoken to some Redskins fans, and I would feel the exact same way they do. They never trusted Bruce Allen's ability to evaluate talent and play the GM role, but they trust McGlewin because he has a proven track record in building teams and getting the talent there.
And they took a guard, you know, they took a center, you took a couple receivers late, and it's a draft, it's a team that hasn't really been very tough. I think of this team as a mentally weak team that's not very tough. So I guess my other my last question is, it's impossible to answer. Just, you know, can Scott McGlue make this into a tough team?
Well, one problem was they were exactly that under their current coach last year. There was really nothing, you know, and we're handing out assignments every week for what games you want to watch. The Redskins very quickly on my list went very, very low. I did not want to get tacked onto that Washington job because they're boring to watch. And Robert Griffin III, he was even boring last year.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
And that's what I'm going to call him.
Robert Griffin III.
That's what I'll continue to call him.
I think you're right. When I picture this team, an offensive line that's a sieve every year, a defensive line you can run right over. So they go out and sign three hog mollies up front on defense to go with Jason Hatcher they signed last year, and now you've got Sheriff to go with Trent Williams, two bookend tackles.
All right, moving on. The New York Giants. I will tell my thoughts about the Giants are, you know, not a very sexy draft. So I'm not, you know, Eric Flowers, they got him at the ninth pick because Scherf went off the board. A lot of people, I think, thought that that's where the Giants would go, or at least the draft Knicks thought that. So they go and they get a big man that they maybe see as a future left tackle. And then in the round two, they get Landon Collins, who maybe is the answer to all their issues. They had one of the worst run defenses in the league. This guy plays close to the line, makes some plays. Do we believe in the Giants' defense being good enough to get some wins when we know they're going to score some points with Odell Beckham? Hmm.
I think they have the makings of a pretty good defense. JPP, Jonathan Hankins played pretty well last year.
Hankins was a beast last year.
DRC and Amukamara is a pretty good combination at cornerback. But I guess add it all up, it looks about average. I shouldn't say good. Maybe a little better than average. How's that for a hot take?
The Giants are going to be my answer to every question about who's the bad team last year, who will make the playoffs this year.
Really?
They play in the NFC East, which, you know, contrary to the Cowboys already anointing themselves Super Bowl favorites or
dynasty favorites.
Or having press conferences that make them seem like they are one of the all-time great teams. I don't think they're that good. I mean, I just don't think that they're – I mean, they seem like a 9-7, 10-16.
Pride comes before the fall, only they never really, you know, had some truly high point.
Giants won three of their last four games of last season. They had the most unstoppable player in the league in Odell Beckham down the stretch, and now they've got a much better offensive line. You can move Pugh inside where he belongs, and that's been a problem for a couple of years. And on defense, like you said, they've got JPP, Hankins. They picked up Landon Collins, which they desperately needed, a safety, so – this team, to me, seems like it has very few holes.
Are we ready for another sneaky Eli Manning, Tom Coughlin Super Bowl trip?
Oh, my
God.
What? It comes around
about
this time.
Well, I will say this.
It wouldn't shock me.
This team has a lot of holes. They have one safety, and he's a rookie. They might start two safeties at rookie. The other one's a fifth-round pick.
So that's one hole.
Michael Thompson. Their linebackers are JT Thomas, John Beeson, and who?
Devin Kennard, who played really well down the stretch last year.
That's a pretty below-average linebacker.
That's half a hole.
I do like, just like the Cowboys, they have 35-year-old Tony Romo. Eli's not a young guy either because we're all getting so old.
But he never gets hurt.
He never gets hurt, but you need to be smart and you need to get protection. So they've got another big hoss there, 6'6", 329, which is Flowers' measurements. You know, build up that line, protect him, and get another 5 years out of him. I like where they're going.
This seems backwards that I'm defending the Giants.
I know. I'm a little dizzy right now. It's happening. So why don't we just move on, because that was a little weird to me. And we move on to Chris Wessling, who will talk to us a little bit about those Dallas Cowboys.
Well, they picked up basically three first-round talents now that Lyle Collins is there. They've got Randy Gregory, who I saw Bobby Klemko, our buddy from the Monday Morning Quarterback.
You call him Bobby?
Bobby Klemko.
I thought it was Robert.
That's our drinking buddy.
Okay.
So he tweeted that one scout told him Randy Gregory was the best defensive player in the draft. To pick him up in the second round, you get Byron Jones, who had the most freakish workout by a defensive back that we've ever seen. Three really interesting guys. But after all that said and done, they still got Darren McFadden and Joseph Randle in the backfield. I guess my question is too much being put on a 35-year-old Tony Romo and a defense that was very mediocre last year? Is too much being put on them and just trusting that they'll be a Super Bowl contender?
Yeah. Even it was funny even when Collins in that press conference was saying, you know, we're going to have the best offensive line. Everybody had a straight face on the dais. Everybody thinks, and I know that was a dominant offensive line last year, but you're assuming that everyone's going to stay healthy and everything will be exactly the same as last year. You have no running back now, in my opinion, or a guy you can count on. I think they're asking for trouble, and I think they're going to get it. I think this team is going to fall back hard this year.
I think, you know, one thing they seemed like they didn't want to repeat from last year was put everything on one running back. And it's not that a committee.
One great running back.
So all right, he had one great season. He wasn't a great running back historically before.
So they want to put it on no running backs.
Well, we don't know that, though.
I have a lot more faith in McFadden than you do. But I don't think it's any coincidence that his one great season was the season they went 12-4.
Right. I mean, last year at this time we were saying, especially I remember myself saying, this defense, oh, man, they're going to win three games.
Memorably.
Thing is going to be a wild train wreck from outer space.
What was it? 50 different adjectives to describe how poor the Cowboys' defense.
Yeah,
is.
And I just wild say, train let's guard ourselves from starting to say this inning. And I get it; they don't have a running back. We've already written 15 posts about this. Let's simmer down. They're going to be
Mark
fine.
Getting Surly's looking.
Well,
at the
no,
clock
they're
going to
be fine.
Surly.
McFadden goes for 1,000 this year. You heard it here first.
Oh my God! You were saying 1,200 downstairs. Give me a break.
I was saying a month ago.
Hold that for a sandwich.
You're taking wager. Castle. I
well,
got McFadden.
We have it. We have one. Castle versus McFadden, and we're going to have a judge decide.
Couple
who
of Pro Bowlers.
The Cowboys. Even I agree that they should slip back, but they do have some reason to believe that they're improving enough to prevent some of that slip back. They had a lot of injuries last year. DeMarcus Lawrence is going to be healthier. Now you have Gregory Hardy you get late in the season.
Sean Lee.
Sean Lee, of course, is back. So hopefully, if you're a Cowboys fan, all that stuff makes up for the natural slide back.
I think you should answer the question that you were asked by one of our listeners on Twitter about this team.
It?
Is this now your favorite team since they've basically built it under your philosophy that character doesn't matter?
Oh, how dare you.
40s and felons.
Y'all don't know me.
Mark Sessler, let's talk.
Scientist cutting
Eagles.
Right into my time here about the Philadelphia Eagles. Ridiculous. I look at the Eagles draft. I mean, early on, at least, it was about what didn't happen because we all thought Chip Kelly, the genius, would find a way to make everyone in the league look dumber than him. He'd get up there and he'd get his Marcus Mariota and everything would be fine. Instead, Tennessee didn't take the bait. And they kind of got stuck just sitting there. And suddenly, the story for me with the Eagles is this whole Sam Bradford thing, they've got to go with it now. And we're going to find out if this thing works. The only thing that they did find, I think, in Nelson Aguilar, a very good Jeremy Maclin fill-in. That gives that position some depth. But are we buying this offense with Sam Bradford at quarterback? Because I just want to remind you that a year ago, before the Chip Kelly effect, we were uniformly calling this quarterback one of the more boring, vanilla, underwhelming passers of our lifetime.
Whoa.
Compared to his draft stock.
That's absolutely true, but we also, and especially you, connected him to his offensive coordinator every time.
Yes, I did.
Who was one of the more boring offensive coordinators of our lifetimes, according to you.
Yes, he was.
Now he's going to a guy who we have called his offense quarterback-proof.
Yes, he is.
Chip Kelly has earned that level of respect from me in terms of having faith that his offense is going to be fine. He had the top three scoring offense in the league with Foles and Sanchez not playing particularly well last year, and they're just as good at running back this year with Murray and Matthews as they were
with
McCoy.
I think they're better.
They added a receiver. It's not a great position. It's a pretty good offensive line. They had a lot of injuries last year.
I think Mark Sanchez started 8 games, I believe, for them last year, or played 8 games, and he was on pace for like a 5,000-yard season. Mark Sanchez. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Like Chip Kelly, they're going to score points. I do trust that. But I can't. The thing I take away is that the genius, the great genius, the unimpeachable genius, I think he was totally confident he was going to spin his magic and end up with Mariota. So I think he's scrambling a little bit because he's like, oh, wait, Sam Bradford is my quarterback now. I'm all in with this guy, old Limpy.
I don't believe that for a second.
Old Limpy.
He did try to trade a lot of the other veterans. There's reports that Michael Kendricks, they sopped
there's
him
also
to
reports,
everyone.
There's
for
also
a
reports
round pick.
That never happened.
It's even coming out now that they
tried
to get
Kendricks. Well, there was another one today, too.
Yeah, Kendricks to everyone. They didn't bite. Here's a random stat. They're the first team in NFL history to change quarterbacks after being a top three scoring offense. So that's how much.
What?
That's how much.
That's the first team in NFL history
to get rid of a quarterback, and now they're counting Foles as the starter because he did have the most starts last year.
I think that's worded incorrectly. Not the first to change quarterbacks.
The first team to get rid of their quarterback after being the top three in NFL history.
The Vikings went from Randall Cunningham after that 1998 season to, I believe, Jeff George.
Brad Johnson.
I think it was Jeff George.
Was it?
Yeah. It was actually Christian Ponder.
We move on to the NFC North, where Greg Rosenthal will talk about the Detroit Lions.
You always put me first.
Oh, yeah. You know?
And then I'm second on Tuesday. Scrambling.
Only 27 more teams to go.
Stop. I like going over.
No, I like it. I got some issues on the side.
Right now, Mark's babysitter is walking along the highway.
That's sad.
Mark's screen door
swinging
open.
Keep rolling. Podcast before family.
Like the end of Incredible Hulk.
Has Jim Caldwell changed the identity of this team?
Papa? Wait, what?
A run first kind of nasty team.
Chris Wessling watching Incredible Hulk?
We're in the middle of a 1981 version. Shut that down. Absolutely. Come on.
Only critical voiceovers from you.
TV show that was on right before Dukes of Hazzard.
We're
you're
down 40 seconds.
You're not hurting yourself. You're hurting the Lions fan.
And the podcast.
All right. Are this going to be a tough run first type of team? They got Warford last year in the third round, and then they surprised a lot of people by taking another Mahler type guard in the first round, Laken Tomlinson, and then their second round pick is a running back as well, kind of a Reggie Bush type of replacement. This offense, which was pretty good last year, now they're trying to get balance. They could be a very intriguing offense.
I'm just answering your question. I don't think they're trying to become a run first offense. I think when you have Calvin Johnson, Golden Tate, and you invested a first round pick in Eric Ebron last year, and you have a $20 million quarterback, you're not trying to be a run first offense. I think they're trying for balance.
Could this be one of the better offenses in the NFC? It could.
Things break right.
Absolutely. Because I think Ebron, he's going to have a better second year than he did last year. It'd be hard not to. But remember, Joe Lombardi's their coordinator.
Under fire all last season.
Sure, but he's coming from a New Orleans Saints structure. He's not going to suddenly become the 1928 Deuce Staley motivators or whatever they are. I was thinking, what was the team called? The Staleys.
The Staley Decaters.
Yeah, they're not going to be them.
Not the Staley.
They also, I don't know. I do think that at the owners' meetings, though, they talked about balance. A couple of the people from that organization a number of times.
By the way, you can get your Deuce Staley motivator
that's ridiculous.
Jersey at NFLshop.com.
Honestly, it has been a long day.
Wait, don't you think the onus is on Stafford here?
Yes.
He's getting paid $20 million a year, and every year he's about a mediocre league average quarterback.
They've got a lot going on there. I trust in their ability to pick some hog molly guard after what they did with Warford last year. That was a pretty surprising pick.
They picked up Manny Ramirez, too.
Yep.
Speaking of Bill Simmons, who we referenced earlier, any Ewing Theory potential with Ndamukong Suh leaving that town? Mm. Of course, Ewing Theory is when a star athlete disappears and the team actually improves the next year.
Well, you got Haloti Ngata, who's not that far off in 2015 value. If you're just going for the next season, that's not too big of a difference. And Ziggy Ansah could be a superstar. I mean, he's a definite breakout candidate.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to fall off the edge of the earth. But I don't – just listening to the way that opposing coaches always talked about Sue, it makes me think that, no, it's not a Ewing Theory.
They better hit on one of these cornerbacks they took at the end of the draft, third and sixth
round. We froze Greg out.
They have no young cornerbacks on this team. It's been a problem forever. Moving on
to the Minnesota Vikings, and I'm going to keep this one simple. Will the Vikings live to regret not moving Adrian Peterson?
No.
I don't think so at all, because they showed promise last year, and now you're putting back in, number one, he is extremely agitated. We've heard that from everyone that's worked out with him. The guy cannot wait to get on the field.
Yeah, he's agitated with his team more than anything.
Well, he's getting used to it now. Right. They're starting to change their tune.
What's better for Teddy Bridgewater in year two than having Adrian Peterson behind you, Mike Wallace on the side, Charles Johnson, and everyone else they got? Kyle Rudolph, maybe, if he stays healthy for more than three games.
His leverage is gone now that the draft's over. And I think if he has this giant chip on his shoulder, like Mark referenced, does he really want to sit out a year and wait to unleash this chip on his shoulder?
His agent immediately changed tune at the end of the draft and said, we appreciate that the Vikings didn't trade him. This got lost in the draft because I think it happened Friday night, because they really showed how much they valued Adrian that they just completely refused to engage
trade. How does that guy live with himself?
And then he said, oh, by the way, we want some more money in our contract. Right. So that would make us happy.
Okay, that's
what a jellyfish.
That's the Adrian Peterson side of it. But back to the Vikings side of it.
Okay.
And Mark, I see what you're getting at. This is a team that is on the rise in the opinion of many. But is it a Super Bowl contender? I don't think that. Are they Super Bowl contender next year? Maybe, but probably not. And by then, Adrian Peterson's prime is over. That's why I think they should have just swallowed their pride and said, you know what, it's over. Too much has happened. Swing the deal, even if it's not the Herschel Walker deal you want, and get back a lot of pieces and really truly build around Teddy Bridgewater.
I disagree so strongly because NFL, you know, football is supposed to be fun. You got Adrian Peterson on your team. You're moving into a stadium next year. Let your fans see such a great player. Let's try to win some games. You know, you don't have to win the Super Bowl. Win one playoff game. That'd be great.
You trade him and all you get back is one first-round pick and you turn it into somebody like Cordarrelle Patterson who rides your bench for half the year.
Right. Look at the first-round picks from the last 2-3 years. How many of them would have been better than 2 or 3 years of Adrian Peterson? I mean, that's what we have to remember.
Unless
all this draft hype.
You hit on it.
Sure, unless.
Sure.
They did have a first-round pick, and they took Trey Waynes. And I was thinking, what rookie cornerback is going to have a tougher job than Trey Waynes in that division?
You
got to go against Nelson and Cobb. You have to go against Kevin White and Jeffrey. You have to go against Megatron and Golden Tate. Trey Waynes better get ready.
And they're going to throw to him and away from Xavier Rhodes, who's a very good corner.
Right. So, I mean, it makes sense. They took a cornerback. They needed one. They picked up a couple big-time needs, guys who should start right away.
Well, Mike Zimmer, one of the best secondary coaches around, so he knew what he wanted. They scouted him, but that's a tough road.
They got Michael Kendrick's brother in the second round.
By the way, Greg, the Ted Wells report was like 274 pages long. Football's not fun.
243. That's what I was trying to say.
Chris Wessling, the Chicago Bears.
So they pick up the best player available on their board in Kevin White, which fills a major need. And they pick up a key piece for Vic Fangio's 3-4 defense.
Vic Fangio.
Yes, that guy. You need a 3-4 nose tackle. You get Eddie Goldman, Goldstander's
cousin. Eddie Goldman.
But now the question is, who's going to rush the passer on this team? You needed to pick up an edge rusher because so many – unlike the Broncos where you're moving to a 3-4 defense, but you have so many guys who fit that defense – the Bears have so many guys who only fit a 4-3 defense. Who's coming off the edge for this team? I know they signed Pernell McPhee, but he was more of a multi-position guy with the Ravens.
Jared Allen vowed that he was not healthy last season and that he could transition to a new defense.
At age 74 or whatever.
Well, he's actually not as old as maybe you would think. He's 32. He had one bad season. I guess you can completely write him off, but there's also a chance he bounces back. This is a great player.
I don't expect him to do well switching from defensive end to outside linebacker. I don't think he has that anymore in his skill set.
Willie Young is a decent, good pass rusher. Pernell McPhee's good. Lamar Houston was a huge signing last year. Maybe not really
an outside pass rusher. He can't play outside.
But that's where they're putting him.
He's going to play outside linebacker, Houston?
That's what they say.
No way.
Maybe he'll be more of like a Jarrett Johnson.
This is
type,
what I'm saying. You hear this all the time from coaches coming in if they switch systems, but these guys are square pegs in round holes.
I mean
they're
they
not going in there.
Right. They gave a ton of money to Lamar Houston and Allen last offseason because they thought they were perfect scheme fits for what they had then. So it is asking a lot to take these players and suddenly move and change positions. Doesn't work out all the time.
Is there any way that Kevin White lifts – / saves Jay Cutler's career the way Odell Beckham lifted Eli Manning?
I don't think that will happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if Jay Cutler goes out and has a season that shuts everybody up to the point where he just has 27 touchdowns and 15 interceptions and he's solid. And he's not the reason they lose the game. He's done that 7 or 8 times in his career. He's been a perfectly fine mid-level starter.
Right,
never
shut
everybody up.
I'm now tracking this ridiculous bounce-back seasons. Wes, you have Darren McFadden.
Yes.
Jay Cutler.
No, I don't even think it's a bounce-back.
Mark,
it's
you and I have to come up with two.
No one's bouncing back.
Oh, I'll go Jared Allen.
Listen, by the way, they let go of a wide receiver that gave Cutler about 100 catches a year for a couple of seasons. So it's not like, here comes someone that's going to, as a rookie, have, what, 65?
That's a good point.
Come on.
And their tight end's on the trading block.
Mark, you got to find someone to get behind to be the champion.
Give me time.
I think the perception of Cutler is worse than he really is. That's all I'm saying. He had 28 touchdowns, 18 interceptions last year. He wasn't the worst player in the league.
He did all that after halftime when his team was down 45-0. He was just every bit of the problem as the defense.
That Dick Butkus.
Don't give me that crap. You know Cutler was terrible last year.
That Butkus Cavallari heat, too. That is also something to keep an eye on. Finally, Mark. Mark, hurry up. Get to it. The Packers.
You know, and everyone praises Ted Thompson, as they should, for not.
Oh, he's grot.
Doesn't panic. He always goes best player available. And they did that. They also filled need, though, at the same time. I guess when you're a good team, you're able to do that. They lost Tremont Williams and Devon House in the secondary, and they went out and got, you know, Quentin Rollins out of Miami round 2. People say that's guy that will come right in. And they got Demaryius Randle, who can play safety and nickel. They got versatility in their secondary. I'm looking around this roster, though, and there weren't a lot of storylines from Green Bay's draft, because I just don't think storylines in the draft come from there was a major hole and you filled it with Marcus Mariota and we'll see if it works. Are there any hole? What concerns you about Green Bay's roster?
Nothing. They're the strongest roster in the whole league.
Barring another Aaron Rodgers injury, which is certainly possible, by the way. But if they stay healthy, I know anything could happen in the NFL, but I'm almost certain they'll be back in the NFC title game. It will just be a matter if they get over the hump. This is a loaded team with an all-time quarterback in his prime.
I agree. I think they can even survive a Jordy Nelson injury. Devontae Adams was impressive last year. You plug him in, and then you have Jeff Janis, a guy like him waiting to get a bigger role. So they drafted Ty Montgomery in the third. I think even Eddie Lacy, you can throw James Starks in there, and you can still get away with him if you have Aaron Rodgers.
Speaking of FU seasons, the Packers have every right to be motivated after how tragically their season ended. What motivation? Could there be better motivation than how last season ended?
Well, they've had a series of outrageous playoff losses. Yeah. They went 15-1 and lost the playoffs. So, you know, they responded by coming back the next season and losing a playoff
game. Totally different, though.
Why is it totally different?
Last year was a different type of loss.
I guess, but that can also damage certain players psychologically.
I think this is a strong team led by Rodgers and a coach that knows how to bounce back. I believe in this team.
It's also a coach that's bowed out in the playoffs multiple times. So, I mean, I'm just saying the DNA is there to do either.
That was the defense.
It was the brutal loss of all brutal losses. And I think if you had shaken up that playoff mix last year a number of times, I think the Packers win the Super Bowl more than any team, but it didn't work out that way.
I'm just saying I still see some use to play out the 2015 regular season before we...
That's what we were saying.
2 points for Greg.
Oh, I got
two points. If you shake that up again, I think the Packers do win the Super Bowl more often than not.
How about you shake it up and Le'Veon Bell's playing in the AFC? I think the Steelers make it through the American Conference a couple times.
Doesn't it seem like, by the way, Ted Thompson
shake it up, Wes? I don't even know what shaking it up even
means,
really. What is this?
We've moved off logic here. What are we talking about?
I don't know.
Doesn't it seem like Ted Thompson only drafts defensive backs? Those are the only people they ever have.
Well, recently they have.
Second-round wide receivers he drafts really
well.
Yeah,
that's fair. They also, we haven't even talked about Hundley. How about that?
Let's talk in 5 years.
It was a good pick. They've needed a developmental quarterback for a long time.
We move on to the NFC South. Almost there, Mark. Halfway there.
I am not. I solved my dilemma, and I'm happy to talk football for the next 7 hours.
Excellent.
We owe you $7 for the extra babysitting time or whatever it is.
Your time, Greg Rosenthal, you bit into your time about 15 seconds. The Atlanta Falcons.
Well, I think the question with the Falcons, as you ended last year, they had to do so much on their defense that it was almost needed to be a complete overhaul, and that's basically what they did. Their first two picks were Vic Beasley, that he's going to try to be their edge rusher that they've been searching for, and then you get Jaylen Collins at cornerback. Little surprise there, but add some depth to a position that was already decent. And you look at this roster, there's a lot of new players here. Soliai, Claiborne, Beasley, Schofield, Reed, Collins, you know, the list goes on and on. It's an almost completely new defense. Do they now have a defense that can compete?
No, I think they're at least another year away. I was underwhelmed by their free agent pickups. I thought they were all average to below average starters in the NFL. Guys like Claiborne have never done anything. Brooks Reed was never a real threat in Houston. Mm. I mean, Justin Durant was okay with the Cowboys. There's a lot of injury-prone guys who just weren't that productive as starters.
Vic Beasley, as I was, you know, scouring all the tape work, I did hundreds of hours on Vic Beasley. Mm. He just had a little smell of a Vernon Golston to him. I don't know why. He smelled like that guy that's like, okay, let's draft him high.
Fighting words.
Speaking of miasma.
Mm. Mark, you're high on Tevin Coleman.
Oh, that's true. Mark picked Everyone should check out our articles. We picked the running backs, receivers, quarterbacks that have the best season. You picked the running back, Tevin Coleman.
Oh, I don't think that Kyle Shanahan is afraid to use a rookie running back a lot. He did that in Cleveland last year. He's done that before with other teams. And, you know, Devonta Freeman, I think they like him, but do we see him as a three-down back? I'm not sure I do. So I think they brought him in to play a lot.
He's got some burst to him. He runs a 4.39 40. He's got some wheels.
I think it's a great system for running backs. So, yes, I am. I think I won that debate online.
Mark, let's stay on the running back depth chart and tell me a little bit about fifth-string running back Colin Mooney.
Mooney, who played for the Niners for a while, was on the Niners roster last year for a stretch. Not a bigger
That's
back.
That's not what the SF stands for. That stands for street free agent.
Don't know.
At least you weren't a liar.
Wait, I want to hear about Mooney.
No, listen, you know, he's probably going to be looking at a different career.
He's a 29-year-old fullback out of Army that spent time with Tennessee.
Yeah, you can looks like you can go online and find information like anyone.
I like Mark's version better.
Matt Ryan, is he who he is right now, or will we see a better Matt Ryan?
I don't know what you mean by is he who he is. He's been a top 10 quarterback for a while.
Okay, geniuses.
I like fifth round pick Grady Jarrett with the Falcons, by the way.
We're just going to let that hang in the air. The contempt of my own colleagues. The Carolina Panthers. Here we go. Michael Oher, who is, the blind spot guy.
Blind side.
Michael Oher, blind side.
Blind spot.
Yeah.
A lot of football movie talk today.
Blind spot.
Michael Oher of the blind spot movie.
Stop eating into my time, Greg. He is their left tackle for the Carolina Panthers, but he stinks. I feel like that's a problem. They didn't address it in the draft, and they also – I thought they should have maybe rolled out the old red carpet if this Lyle Collins is somebody that didn't commit any major crimes. But instead, you know, it's Rex Ryan getting gumbo, and then the Dallas Cowboys, they got the big old star. Left tackle, starter,
bad teams,
Michael O'Hare.
I kind of disagree. And I know everyone in the world thinks that Orr is terrible. The Panthers, by the end of last season, had one of the best offensive lines in the league. And they replaced Byron Bell with Michael Oher, who is more talented. And the Panthers also have one of the best offensive line coaches in the league, who has turned guys like Mike Remmers and Andrew Norwell into above-average NFL starters. They have confidence that our offensive line coach can turn Oher's career around, former first-round pick. Who am I to say they can't?
So you're having faith in the staff. They did draft a tackle. I don't know much about Darryl
Williams. They
also
said
but he is a tackle. He's going to play right tackle.
They're like, we gave him, and now this doesn't sound that great, but we gave him a multi-year deal because this wasn't a patch. We do believe he's going to be a guy we can hang on to. Again, it is May 7th, so this has the chance to balloon into a lot of puff pieces over the summer. Maybe we just wait and see because he was a disaster last season.
I agree. I think the easy answer is he'll be a disaster again. I don't want to write off the fact that coaching can make him a better player.
They took another receiver, which I'm happy about as a Cam Newton, you know, supporter. But Devin Funchess is a interesting guy. I mean, a huge guy who ran really slow at the combine. Some people wondered if he could play tight end or not. They've got these two really big receivers in Benjamin and Funchess, but not a lot of speed there.
I like that Dave Gettleman essentially looked at Cam Newton 2 years ago and said, this guy has a major weakness. I can either sacrifice speed in my lineup or I can let him keep overthrowing all my receivers. And he chose to sacrifice speed and get a bunch of towers in there. So now you have Olsen, Funchess, and Benjamin, who are all 6'4 or bigger and over 230 or 250 pounds. And they have huge strike zones, which fits their quarterback. So I think they were willing to sacrifice speed to build this team around Cam Newton.
Wes, the Saints.
Look at who they've picked up. They've gotten Brandon Browner, Danelle Ellerbe, and Anthony Spencer on defense in free agency. Then they draft Stephon Anthony Kakaha and P.J. Williams in the early rounds. They add to their O-line with Max Unger, one of the best centers in the league. And then they draft Andres Pete, a tackle, and they sign C.J. Spiller. So these areas where they're going defense, offensive line, and running game, do you guys think they have successfully pulled off an identity change in one offseason?
I do. I think that it's funny that a couple months ago there was whispers that the Saints kind of saw their Super Bowl window closing, and they, you know, the Jimmy Graham trade and everything else, that we're just selling the farm. Everyone's available. But really, it's hard to do in one season what they've done, to completely change the makeup and the way you're going to hurt opponents. And I think that they're in a better position than anyone would imagine. So, yes.
They've added a lot of talent on defense, and I don't know if any of them are difference makers, but it looks like Rob Brien is just like, all right, I need to get rid of these holes. I had too many holes at linebacker. I need to get new bodies in there. And C.J. Spiller is still my favorite move that's happened since the beginning of free agency.
I mean, I don't know if they've pulled off an identity change, because to me, a huge part of their identity is that they're terrible on defense in two of the last 3 years. And then the other year, they were great. So I have no idea how they're going to be on defense. They literally were one of the three or four worst defenses in 2012, it would have been. A top five type of group the next year, and then right back at the bottom last year. I don't know.
I'm thinking more on offense, to be honest, but you're right. Rob Ryan's been totally schizophrenic. So.
But they could win the division and win 10 games with a bad defense, but you're not going to beat the Seahawks and Packers. And I think that's the bar that, you know, Saints have had so much success that that's the bar for them now, is they want to go deep.
A lot of pressure on Rob Ryan. If they crap the bed again, I think he's going to find trouble getting another defensive coordinator job. Mm. He might have to retreat to a defensive line coach job or a linebacker coach job.
Wow.
Well, I mean, let's look at it. He's had, what, one big-time year with the team with a winning record? Ever.
That's fair.
His overall rankings are abysmal.
He's had some bad teams, too.
I mean, they have...
He's contributed to them, though.
Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be honest. We don't know these guys they drafted, but they could make or break this season. They had five picks in the first three rounds. Stephon Anthony's first round pick will probably start. Kakua from Hawaii, another big moment for Hawaii. He's just on a run right now as a state. And PJ Williams at cornerback. I have
Golden
no idea.
Age for Hawaii.
I have no idea if these guys are good, but they're all drafted in the first three rounds. This is a defense where you could see young players, rookies starting right away.
I think as we talked about earlier in the offseason, they really have made a commitment to the running game, it looks like. But to me, it all ultimately goes back to Drew Brees. Is he in decline now? Seemed to be showing some signs of it last year. Now you take away Jimmy Graham. If he's really fading in age 36 season, they don't have any.
This is where I say with the transformation, and Wes pointed this out a couple months ago too, that they're kind of building. Oh, forget that point.
No, you get 5 seconds.
Oh, they're building a team that will help. Enough with the sound effects. That's what Romo had last year, a great couple of running backs and a power-type run game.
Good point. And I remember when Tom Brady was in decline at this time last year.
Mm.
Here we go. We move on to the NFC South's final division, final team, the Tampa Bay Bucks. Mark Sessler.
The Bucks. You know, we talked a lot about Tennessee finally finding some identity when they went out and got Marcus Mariota. And
you're pressing your luck, T.
He cracking himself up behind the glass.
How about a shred of professionalism? Even a shred. I just look at the Bucks. I say they did the same thing if this works out, because they look at their quarterbacks they've had. Josh McCown, Mike Glennon, couple of bums, let's be honest. Josh Freeman, gone. Jeff Garcia, Gino Gradkowski, Chris Sims, Brian Greasy. That's been the last decade. If this Winston guy hits, then everything that we've said about the Bucks could change.
Gino Gradkowski.
Yes.
Gino's his shorter
his center brother.
So your point, if they hit on the quarterback.
Gradkowskis and Gronkowskis?
They're okay as a franchise.
Well, sure. So is any team.
That's what I mean. And it is. It's kind of simple. It's like when you have the number one overall pick and all the pressure on you, and there are quarterbacks available, and you make that pick on the quarterback, it's a multi-year gamble.
Well, I like what they did, because they used the next two picks on offensive line, and that was the issue last year, because it's hard. Honestly, I like Glennon more than some, and it's hard to get a read on what happened to quarterback with the way the line played. I mean, if that's with any team, that quarterback's in trouble, and Winston will be no better if they don't fix it. I don't care about their wide receivers and Austin Seferian Jenkins. If he's getting sacked 62 times, it's going to be abysmal.
They have some fun young talent with McCoy, Evans, and Winston.
Haven't we been saying this, though, for years about the Bucks? They have all this talent, and then the season starts.
They probably, like, when you compare winning percentage to amount of times they get picked for the playoffs by pundits, they're probably at the top of the list.
How dare you forget Lavonte David.
Lavonte David, should have said him. If nothing else, Lovie Smith set the bar so low with his first season. I'm not even – it sounds like I'm joking here – that if they win six games, people are like, okay, Bucks are on the right path. They just tripled their win totals. Whereas if Bill O'Brien and what I think is a pretty lousy Texan team win six games, it's like, uh-oh, what's the problem here? So, Lovie, way to set the bar low.
Those two second-round offensive linemen, like Mark said, they desperately needed those guys, but desperately needing rookie offensive linemen is not a good place
to
be.
No, but that's where they're at.
Mark, the final word.
Well, you're a huge Marpet fan, right? Ollie Marpet.
Big on him. Well, no, I think it's time for this team to stop completely underachieving. What they did last year was impossible to watch.
And finally, we move to the NFC West. Well, Greg, a little heads up. You're up first. The San Francisco 49ers.
The San Francisco 49ers took a lot of players right in the Trent Baalke, Eric Mangini mold. And I'm considering Mangini part of the mix now. He used to be very good at drafting players when he was in New York and when he was in Cleveland.
Those Rex Ryan seasons, the early seasons, those are Mangini
teams. I don't think it extended to
Cleveland. How did he end up as tight ends coach or whatever?
Well,
he
wasn't,
water
a, good,
boy
he wasn't a good coach
kind
and
of
he
a jerk.
Didn't treat people well and that sort of thing. But he had a pretty good draft record. And I think these three players they took in the first round, in the first three rounds, Eric Armstead and Jaquiski Tartt, and who was their third round pick?
Eli Harold,
who Daniel Jeremiah thought was a great value. You know, they're going to go a long way to kind of remaking this 49ers defense that needs some new young blood.
So what's the question?
There's no rule that had to be a question.
So you're saying, how about this? After a long stretch, a lot of craptastic stuff happening to the Niners, a nice little draft for San Francisco, and they start to move forward.
That's what they hope.
Is this a team that's sneaky? Like, people are thinking they go
4-12. That's a demanding one.
Do they sneaky win 7, 8, 9 games when we think
yes.
there's a big disaster?
I think it's possible. I think there's definitely a chance that they are in that 500 range. They're not going to go 12-4 anymore.
Yeah. To me, that's their over-under. Not that we can, you know, that's.
What is that?
They should be about an 8-win team. Why not? I mean, you still have a lot of good players. I'm not giving up on Colin Kaepernick. You have Navarro Bowman coming back. You have Alden Smith. You have Antoine Bethea coming off a great season. You have Vernon Davis. It's not Joe Staley. It's not a bad team. Let's not give Jim Harbaugh too much credit.
God forbid that happened.
Jim Tom Sewell also. He's
West
done a good job.
West looks bored. He's tuning out.
I'm extremely bored by this team. I think you're right. That they look like an 8-8 really boring squad. And I am going to give Jim Harbaugh too much credit. I thought he was a great coach. And I think that whatever machinations happened in the front office, they kind of screwed themselves.
All right, I do have a question now. Is this going to be the big fireball of an NFL return to the spotlight for the man genius? Maybe this is going to be a storyline in San Francisco.
Well, possibly my least favorite coach of the last decade, ooh. Eric Mangini.
Wow.
I like that.
You want to talk about, by the way, Lovie Smith lowering expectations. Jim Tom Sewell's opening press conference really lowered the bar.
Are you
really
saying
beneath
he did
the
that
ground.
On purpose?
Maybe. Maybe we're all selling the man short. But, you know, to that point, you know, everybody's going to miss Jim Harbaugh and Tom Sula. He's going to coach up that team. I think Mangini's a good coach. I think he's worked his way all the way back now to D coordinator. And if they have a really nice season on defense, they need some guys to get healthy and some guys to, you know, keep on the straight and narrow. Mangini puts himself in the mix to be the next coach of the Cleveland Browns.
Also,
that's already happened.
Also, I'm going to assign Wes to cover the big-time punter battle. Punter battle between fifth-round pick Bradley Pinion and three-time first-team All-Pro Andy Leake. Punter battle.
If Pinion thinks he's getting that job, he's sorely mistaken. Andy Lee will take on all comers.
Hot punter take.
You guys are biting into my Seahawks time with punter talk?
Sorry.
How dare you? All right, here we go. The Seahawks. This is interesting. Michigan defensive end Frank Clark was their top pick. And I thought it was interesting that people that cover the draft, a lot of people didn't like the pick. You know, Clark was tied into a domestic violence incident. And maybe, just maybe, let's say this Clark thing doesn't work, or is this the first hint that maybe John Schneider has exited out of his little golden period, and the Seahawks are coming back down to earth?
With one pick.
One pick! That's all I got! Listen, I was put on an assignment right before we came upstairs covering that damn Cowboys press conference, so I don't know, I've had barely any time to prepare this.
Well, how about we view their first round pick as Jimmy Graham?
Sure.
Which completely changes this offense. So, and I think a lot of drafts we've come out with Seattle and said, especially early before they got, oh, this Pete Carroll and Schneider combo, what are they thinking? They completely overvalued on player X, and then it's exactly what they needed for that team. So, 3 years from now, I can answer your question, Dan.
I like.
Thanks, Mark.
I like this Tyler Lockett pick. I think he was a favorite of DJs. He was a favorite of a lot of people. And I guess the question I have. Can the Seahawks continue to win with receivers that are, you know, slightly built and don't win with physicality at all?
It's a fair point. And in the Clark pick, it's interesting that it did get a lot of heat locally in Seattle. I mean, people were really upset about this because Schneider, as you mentioned, went out of his way to say we would never take anyone that put his hands on a woman, and there was a police report where that was accused and all this stuff going on. It couldn't have been more less popular in Seattle than it is.
One other question with Seattle. I mean, what happened coming out of the Super Bowl, that secondary may not, probably will not be up to snuff when the start of the season comes. There's injury issues. They went out and drafted two guys, but that's not going to be the same situation that we've been used to there. I think they're going to be – they may be tested early by some teams.
Yeah, and, well, they also went out and signed old sconces, Kerry Williams. So we'll figure – see how he does there.
They need to have some of these draft picks come in and start producing – right away again, because they had a great run of picks, and now it's been a little.
Where will they play?
It's been a little bit of a lull.
every position's.
Do you think? Do you think with the Packers
defensive tackle they could have
center
drafted someone?
The loaded Green Bay Packers and the Seahawks, you know, losing some guys, maybe not core guys, but have some injuries and things of that nature. Are the Packers the best team in the conference right now? In your opinion?
I think they have the strongest roster, but when you have Seattle's superstars, you've got so many All Pros with Seattle that. And they might not be quite as deep, but they're better at the top.
All right, moving on. Let's go to the West and the St. Louis Rams.
We'll stay in the West with the St. Louis Rams. They draft Todd Gurley in the first round. They pick up four offensive linemen in the draft. So clearly they're going with this defense and running game formula. Will the O-line, which is now going to have several rookies and be rebuilt, and the quarterback situation prevent them from reaching their playoff potential?
I don't think so. You said you're going to be answering the Giants for whoever asks you what team can come out of the wilderness to replace a playoff team. I don't know why. When I was home one day just doing whatever, it came to me. This is gonna be the year that the Rams get over the hump and at least make the playoffs. So they've got enough going on, and that they end the 6-10 and 7-9 run.
I know what you weren't doing that day when you came up with this idea, watching Nick Foles tape.
I was going to say, the reason that surprised me, and I know you love the defense and the running game with Todd Gurley. We don't know how many games to play this year, but you were maybe the biggest critic of Nick Foles in this room last season before he got hurt.
It's a fly in the ointment, but I do think he's not going to be worse than Austin Davis and Sean Hill. So are they upgrading the position? Maybe
you go from 6-10 to 7-9.
A little bit, and then the defense gets better, and you got the running games better and everything else.
But there are weird playoff teams that get in every year where they've had to play to some degree around their quarterback, and they're doing the best they can to have that kind of roster with the defense they have and adding Gurley. I don't like any of their wide receivers for the most part. They feel like the most underachieving bunch in all the leagues, so that's a concern. And Foles
annually.
Annually, correct. So we'll see. I mean, what, it's 6-10, 7-9?
You know,
about right to me.
Looking at this draft, it's almost like Jeff Fisher, who's been hanging around now for how many years? 20 years?
1 million.
Master of the 7-9 season.
It's almost like he's like, this might be it. This might be my last draft. If I'm going out, I'm going out my way. We're taking a running back in the first round, and then we're taking four more offensive linemen. I've never seen such a draft. I don't care. That's all
bizarre.
I care about is 4-yard runs.
It's almost like they wanted an offensive lineman in the first round, then they saw Gurley there, and they were like, all right, we'll take a running back, but we got to take four more to make up for the fact
that we got to get Havenstein in the mix.
The question is, when they go 7-9 again, will Teflon Les Snead survive?
Yes, he will.
He should
for
be
another
Teflon.
7 or 8 years.
He took over the worst team in NFL history over a 5-year span, and they got better right away. You can get rid of
Let's
Fisher.
See it.
Have they ever gone over 500? He's been there for years now.
This team won 5 games over a 3-year span, the worst in NFL history.
And finally, Mark Sessler.
We're just waiting for the buzzer there. Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals. I think there's two winners on this team. One.
Okay.
All right. Well.
Is this winners and losers?
No, I'm just saying. I think Carson Palmer.
The Cardinals of Arizona playing in Phoenix this year.
You know, listen. We're on minute 126.
Did you know
the turf
slides out of the stadium and gets sun?
Shall I barrel on with this? Yes. This is why are you filibustering in my 2 minutes left?
I like how possessive everybody is about their minutes.
I'm fine giving up the floor. I think and we talked about this earlier again on NFL Now. It's everything we talk about. It's 12 times in one day at this point.
Who are the winners? Who are the winners?
Carson Palmer. They went out and they've rebuilt that offensive line over the past two seasons. That guy is totally immobile. And their season went down in flames without a quarterback last year. You've got DJ Humphreys round one. I like that. They added Veld here before. Mike Iupati, Jonathan Cooper.
It's true.
Suddenly this offensive line on tape was impossible to watch. Now it's a strength. The other guy, How about Andre Ellington? We kept thinking after what the season he had, they had to go get a running back that could take his place. David Johnson, third rounder, he's not going to do it. Bruce Arians said Andre Ellington's role is not going to even change.
Andre Ellington's a sixth-round pick. David Johnson's a third-round pick. And this is a big guy who people really think has a very good skill set in the receiving game, which I like, so that you can use him a little bit in the red zone.
He sounded intriguing. Because Ellington can't handle that workload.
I was going to say, did they foresee the same role for Ellington, and he's going to get hurt again?
Well, it sounds absurd. I don't think it's the 25 to 30 touches thing that we had to deal with last offseason, which was a nightmare.
But Johnson's not been supplanted,
that's all.
No, that's true. I think Johnson will be a big part of this team. They took the third-ranked Shaq in the draft, Shaq Riddick. So a little shaky.
I tweeted out some Carson Palmer numbers the other day. I think it would surprise some people that in his last 15 starts, he's 13-2 with a 27-12 TD to interception ratio and a 96 passer rating. So this team should compete for definitely a playoff.
Another reason the Rams are not going beyond 7 wins.
I have a question for you guys. Who are the following? Harold Goodwin, James Betcher, and Amos Jones.
That is the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, and I don't know who Amos Jones is.
He's the special teams coach. But that isn't that amazing for an NFL team? No one knows those people.
Mark knew it.
It's the Bruce Arians coaching tree starting to bloom.
Mark, top three coordinators in your life right now, your favorite three.
Ever or now?
Ever. Right now.
John DeFilippo, number one.
Yeah.
Young riser.
Yep.
Bottom of my list, Kyle Shanahan.
We know your bottoms. Wow. Ryan Schottenheimer.
Your comments seem to respect his ability to run an offense.
I really do.
Where's the laser? Still tough.
Laser's got to be number two, pushing one. Number three, I don't have a number three. I got two guys.
All right. That's it.
Are you going to sign off?
All right. That's it. Great job, guys. 32 teams, 2 shows, 17 hours. The Around the NFL podcast is done for the week. Thank you to everyone who listened. We'll be back with another group of wildly entertaining shows. And a little tighter window. But let us know if this was insufferable for you. This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and Tate Day behind the glass. Until Tuesday.